Hello and welcome to show 69 of the Hobcast Book Show. I'm Agent Hobart and Rebecca is with me. And we will be with you properly in a few moments. But we wanted to tell you that we started this program recording behind the scenes at the Royal Tunbridge Wells Literary Festival. We had a few technical issues, but we wanted to save what we got from it. And so here's the start of the show.
Welcome to The Hobcast, a weekly podcast from Hoback Books, an independent publisher of thrillers, crime, and suspense novels. Each week, we'll take you behind the scenes of what we do, the challenges and the triumphs, the bumps and troughs of building a new creative business in this pandemic world. We'll hear from the people who make all this possible, the authors, cover designers, and editors, and we'll have expert insights from our guest star interviews. Nothing is off the agenda on the Hobcast from Hoback Books, as we combined trad values and an indie spirit.
Hello.
And welcome to the Hobcast, show number 69.
69.
It is. And look, in that intro that I recorded many moons ago, over a year ago, we said we'd take you behind the scenes.
And we literally are behind the scenes.
We are in the dressing room of the Trinity Theatre.
And there's a big
in
star.
Tunbridge upon Wells, Royal Tunbridge Wells. And there's a big star on stage.
Jessica, I've never been in a dressing room before.
It's very exciting, isn't it?
It's very glam.
Well, you can hear a little bit of noises off there. Robert Dawes is ready to get to stage. I'll be introducing him in about 10 minutes' time. Very exciting. It's quite alarming. Let's go and have a just walk through from where we are now, past the stage, and see how the crowd is building for this.
Oh, yes, let's.
Now.
Oh,
I said now.
And go through the door.
And go through the door, yeah.
Not the doors, but the door.
No, absolutely. Here's
the crowd. Look at the books.
The books are here. So that's a joy for us.
It is.
In 10 minutes' time, Robert will be on stage. There is a hubbub, an official hubbub.
Lots of people enjoying coffee and tea.
Absolutely. Absolutely. We're going to grab a couple of people here. People are running away from our microphones.
I don't blame them.
Hello. I'm just going to ask you a couple of questions, if I may, for
arthritis.
Oh, yours? Right, fine.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello, Adrian. Hello, Rebecca.
How are you?
Good, thank you.
So, what brings you here?
Bob.
Of course.
You too, of course.
Oh, well, thank you so much.
That's very kind of you.
And, well, we've had a few crises backstage, so I hope you'll be able to sort of smooth some furrowed brows there.
What happened?
Computer issues.
Oh, yes. Always technical issues.
No, he's come because I
texted
and DM'd him and said he
was
coming.
But it's all sorted now.
When I heard Adam's comments, I thought, he's not coming. Well, I've come down from Bradford.
Oh, wow. You've come quite a long way then.
Well, I live in Bromley.
Well, okay, so not so far for you. Bradford?
Yes.
How long did it take to get from Bradford?
Oh, when? Hang on.
Yeah, with a good journey on Wednesday.
I drove down the...
Get your microphone in.
What?
This is for our podcast. You listen to the Hobcast. Oh, thank you.
Well, you'll be. I've been mentioned a few times. Podcast. Very embarrassing.
All right. Well, that's very kind.
It's a great interest of mine. Yeah. No, it took me. It took us about 5 hours, I think, this time. But it has taken a lot more in the past. But.
Yeah, we
it
had a five-hour journey from Staffordshire the other day.
It depends on the traffic. I'm driving, my husband's had to go back, but I'm driving back tomorrow.
Well, we hope we can throw you an event worth being at.
I'm sure you will.
Thank you so much.
It'll be nice to see you all.
Yeah, you too.
You too.
And there, things went a little technically awry.
It might have been the odd gin and tonic I had.
It could be. Well, two lovely ladies. One had travelled from Bradford to meet Robert Dawes.
It was remarkable.
Was her number one fan, I think.
I wouldn't want to comment exactly on her age, but she was not too many years fewer than my mother, was she?
I would say probably around the same bracket.
And she regularly drives like that to visit her sister, who lives in... the outskirts of London, I think.
Yes, that's right.
Bradford. She thinks nothing of it. She was telling me later on in the evening all about how she loves driving a car and she puts her music on and she bops about to it. And
yeah, they were great. Well, it was a lovely occasion. So Robert Dawes was appearing at the Royal Tunbridge Wells Literary Festival, their very first one. It was really to celebrate the opening of their reopening of their library, this fantastic facilities at the Amelia Scott.
You
in
fell
Central
in
Town.
Love, didn't you?
Oh, it was brilliant. I mean, it has a elements of a museum, tells the story of the spa elements of Georgian Tunbridge Wells. It has brilliant reading rooms, a lovely cafe. It's got exhibition spaces, a grand
quite
piano
nice
for people
too.
To play. I mean, it's just, yeah, nice toilets. What a job they've done with it. It's brilliant. And so they had a literary festival. It was very eclectic. And, there were some, a couple of crime writers alongside Bob and across the four-day programme. Harriet Tice being the lead name, I think.
Yeah, it's a shame we didn't get to meet Harriet, because I'm currently listening to It Ends at Midnight, which is her most
latest
recent
one. Yeah,
I'm
reading
it.
Blood Orange, which was the breakout hit for her. Mm. We'll get her on the show before very long. But anyway, let's get you into the show. So this is the Hopcast Book Show, and as I mentioned, it's show 69. Don't snigger. And
why would they snigger? Oh, Summer of 69 by Brian Adams. Well,
that's the one. And oh dear, we've gone down the rabbit hole already. My name is Adrian Hobart.
You said that.
Yeah, and you are?
I'm Rebecca Collins.
And together we run Hobeck Books, UK independent publishers of the following genres.
Crime.
Suspense.
Mystery.
And thrillers.
You nearly forgot.
Thought I'd add an element of suspense. And who knows, we'll probably come up with some other...
alien space cats.
Yeah, leprechaun romance. I don't know. We'll probably... Venture
send your submissions for Leprechaun Romance.
Yes, please. Yes,
to
please.
The following address.
So, as we mentioned, we were at the Royal Tunbridge Wells. I keep pausing over Tunbridge Wells. I don't know why.
And you had Royal. Well, I mean, I know it is the Royal Tunbridge Wells.
Yeah,
but...
it got that epithet not so long ago, so they're very proud of it.
Yeah. It's a very nice city, actually. Is it a city or town?
A town.
It's a very
town.
Nice town. It's quite spacious and airy, and the people were... just quite relaxed, I thought.
Yeah, no, it's definitely well healed, and there was a stage in my career in the BBC where the likelihood is, I mean, a lot of my colleagues. Let me just explain. About 20 years ago, they decided that the southeast region of England was not served well by broadcasting services, and. The reason was there were these huge gaps, which were, didn't get their own local programming. And so what happened was if you were watching in Surrey, you had to watch BBC London. And BBC London never, ever mentioned Surrey. Never, ever. It's always about
very London-centric.
Yeah, very much the metropolitan area. And BBC South Today, which I worked for, was based in Southampton. And its transmission area kind of ended about Hastings.
Oh,
so
right.
It left,
Surrey.
Yeah, well, Surrey and Kent were basically abandoned for proper local broadcasting, apart from radio. So they decided to create a new hub there in Tunbridge Wells. And a lot of my friends went on to become sort of the on-air talent and the producers of this stuff. So that could have been my fate, but I decided to go into BBC Sport around that time.
A bit of a sliding doors moment for you then in Tunbridge Wells.
Yeah, I think so. I mean... and they're still there, some of them. I mean, there's very senior figures within that cluster, as they call it. Anyway, so I went to have a look at the new offices, and I thought, do you know what? I made the right decision. It wasn't for me.
No,
I heard legendary stories about the infighting and the problems they had in that.
Oh,
and
you wouldn't have enjoyed that.
Well, look, you get them everywhere in the BBC. But it just takes one bad apple boss to make your life a misery. And
I've
had a few. Yeah, bad apple bosses.
You've got one
I've
now.
I've had a few. Yeah, you, Aki the cat. Yes. So anyway, we will be hearing from Robert Dawes. Now, what we've done is we did get to record the Q&A section of his one man show. He did an adapted one man show. Normally, he does when he's on stage. On cruise ships, which he does quite regularly. He'll do 2 hours talking about his career, and it's fascinating and entertaining. But he cut it back to talk about the writing element of being an actor.
Yes, it reminded me of Dave Gorman's stand-up PowerPoint shows, actually. Very similar.
It was a tour de force. And boy, he's got a great voice. Actually, I might be able to...
Yeah, he's singing.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, I might just play out the show tonight As we record this. I think we've got it.
Yeah.
So I'm making a promise which may not be able to keep. But yeah, he's got a great voice.
And before he went on stage, when he was sort of warming himself up and gearing himself up for the main event, he was walking around singing. Not the song he sang, but just random singing.
Well, I mean, as any good actor, narrator, whatever, you know, you would warm up your voice.
But I was sat there and I was thinking, oh, Robert, you've got a great voice. I want to take you to karaoke one night.
Yeah. He later revealed to us privately, perhaps we shouldn't say this, but there is a possibility that Amy, his wife, and he will be doing a song and dance show on the ships before very long. They're thinking about working together on that.
So yeah. That's,
and they also revealed to their last cruise, and we forgot to mention it to the audience that had travelled to see him from far and wide, that actually they are co-writing a novel.
That's about all we know at the moment.
That is all we know about at the moment. And hopefully we'll be the ones publishing it. But we can never guarantee these things. But we had a lovely time and we met Bob's mother and sister. So.
Oh, his family. They were lovely.
They were.
His mum was really sweet, wasn't she? And there was one point later on in the evening when she was sat next to you and I was sat next to Bob and we looked over and you were... All we heard was BBC, BBC, and she looked completely gobsmacked, but she was listening to every word.
Yeah.
And then Bob turned to me and he said, she doesn't own a TV.
I think it must have been a complete mystery to her. Anyway, it was a nice occasion. And we'd like to thank the organisers of the Literary Festival for inviting both Bob and ourselves an opportunity to sell a few books as well. So that was lovely. It was a reminder that, you know, there are the biggies. And we'll talk about Harrogate's lineup later in the show because they announced it this week and their ticket structure and all that sort of thing, which comes up in July. But there are mega festivals where everyone's, you know, milling around on site and, you know, and you get full access. And there's ones like this where it's multiple venues, individual events, which don't necessarily link together apart from the fact they're about books and authors. So it was a little different from what we have experienced in the past.
Well, except for the Shrewsbury Children's Literary Festival, which I've been to a couple of times. It's very similar to the Tunbridge Wells one where you book tickets for events that were spread across the town.
Yeah.
I mean, considering it's their first one as well.
I wish them every strength. They've got some great facilities, you know, within the town to do these things. Perfect venues for the occasion.
Yeah.
And they had some other names that Joe Brand, David Baddiel, were the two sort of big star names overall. Which were terrific.
Yeah,
I think it was really a question of, you know, given that it was a late decision to sort of commit to doing it, it was who they could get as well. But I'm sure everyone's learnt a lot from it. So I did enjoy being on stage with Bob doing the emceeing bit a little bit, you know, pick up a mic.
You did, yes. It was very impressive. And I had to run around giving people Hobet badges.
Yep, that's true. That's true, we did. Listen, before we get into the industry news, we'd like to congratulate Linda Huber.
Linda, yes. So just today, as we record, Linda has been awarded a...
Chill with a Book Award.
A Chill with a Book of the Month.
Book of the Month Award, which is really special. So that is fantastic. Congratulations. And I think the Hobet Book sort of catalogue is now collecting these at a rate of knots, which is fabulous.
Do you think we can now call ourselves award winning? Well, not quite.
I think this is, well, why not? Everyone else calls themselves award winning, don't they? Doesn't matter what you do in life, you're always an award winner. You know, even if it's a certificate from your mum, you're an award winner.
I did win a certificate when I was about 10 years old, a W.H. Smith's Young Writers Award.
Wow, really? Yes. I've never heard that.
I did.
Sliding doors moment.
Oh, no. Well,
yeah.
I should just get on and write a book, shouldn't I?
Well, yeah, funny you should say that. Anyway, we that's fantastic. So Daria's Daughter is the title. We have published two of Linda's, and Daria's Daughter is the one that's got this one, but Pact of Silence remains, for the last couple of months, our bestseller, so it's doing really well.
Yeah.
Obviously we're still feeling the sort of ripples of pleasure.
We are.
And I, you know, pride, actually, is probably a better word, for the nominations for the John Creasy New Blood CWA Dagger Awards nominations for Anthony Dunford and for Mark Whiteman.
I wondered what you were going to say.
Well, I mean, it's interesting because it has started conversations. You know, that sort of one or two.
Yeah, we won't say any more than that. No, but it has.
Yeah, people have reached out to us.
Yes.
Shall we put it that way?
Yeah. So, yeah, it's some exciting things.
Potentially,
for us.
Yeah.
Potentially.
Well, I mean, you know, nothing, you know, it's going to take a long time for anything to sort of crystallize at all. But it just, you know, as ever with these things. And we do hasten to add, you know, we had some other entries in, it didn't get shortlisted. So, you know, you put yourself in for these things and it, you know, it costs some money.
Yeah, there is a cost.
There is a cost involved. And I think it's easy to underestimate the impact that, you know, the credibility that being nominated suddenly gives the company and the authors concerned. So it's been, you know, that's been a positive this week.
Definitely. And the shortlist will be announced, I think, at Crimefest in Bristol. So we look forward to that.
On the Friday night. A number of Hoback authors will be joining us there at Crimefest. And at the moment, we're trying to sort out a venue.
We're going out for din-dins, aren't we?
For dinner.
But I think Brian's in charge.
Yeah. Yeah, just the person we needed to sort out. Here comes the cat. You can probably hear. She will make her presence felt in a couple of seconds as she stalks towards us.
Oh, she's right, rampaging towards us at a rate of knots.
All right, Aki, that's enough.
Hello, Axe.
Yes, I understand. And so that was exciting. But let's talk about industry news. Now, the big one this week was it's not just about books. It's the whole ecosystem. Oh, there's another little cat that's just gone through the garden. So maybe that's why Aki's come
really?
In.
Really?
Yeah.
Was it Magic Cat?
No, it wasn't. It's a different cat altogether. It's quite young as well. Or quite scrawny. Anyway, black and white cat.
Oh, I haven't seen it. Oh, there, I saw it.
Yeah.
Tortoiseshell, I think that is, isn't it?
No, don't think so. Is it?
Well, okay.
Right, well, I don't think we need to argue about that on air. Anyway, the big story is Amazon. Amazon made its first loss since 2015, announced this week, $3 billion. Now, in the scheme of things, doesn't seem like a big deal. That's a lot of, I mean, it's a lot of money, but compared to what Amazon have been generating, it's nothing.
Yeah.
However, it is one of those things, like the story we did last week about the week before about Netflix, any sign of trouble in a company like Amazon, Netflix, Google, whatever, Facebook, is amplified by the reaction of the markets.
Absolutely. It's almost a sort of bigger example of the opposite effect of being nominated. You know, a positive or a negative effect will affect the rest of your business, even if the rest of your business has stayed the same. People get nervous if something, you know, it's a sign of something going wrong.
Well, I mean, let's just put this in some context then. They also said, this is Amazon themselves, said that the next quarter, so this is $3 billion loss in the first quarter of this year, that next quarter is going to be a lot more challenging. So that sort of lays the groundwork for what else are they hiding?
They know already, don't they?
Yeah.
They're softening the blow.
They are. They're sort of laying the groundwork there. Now, things have changed at Amazon significantly. Jeff Bezos, or Bezos, or whatever his name is, stepped away from running it day to day a few months ago. So that's one aspect that has changed. So there's a new CEO in charge.
Mm.
The other thing that happened was that they started investing, as Amazon have been doing and most of these big companies are doing. They're trying to buy into future technologies. So the thing that really makes Amazon successful now, as has become clear from these figures, is not the retail side that we deal with. It is actually their data.
Side. Okay.
They have AWS is the company that they've created. And if you ever watch Formula One, the data that's on screen is provided by AWS. It has a logo attached to it. So they are used by all the big companies now as the number one sort of data.
Data generation?
I would say management system.
Oh, right. Oh, and DMS,
analysis software and all that sort of stuff. So that's really driving the profits at Amazon. The retail side has taken a dent. because A, the pandemic bubble has burst in terms of everyone rushed to use
People
Amazon.
They're returning to shops.
They're returning to shops. So that's one thing. Then there's the other elements around the economy, the cost of living crisis, particularly the cost of fuel and the impact on delivery. So the revenue, you know, they are now probably losing money on every delivery on Prime.
Oh gosh, yeah, that as well. I was thinking just people aren't buying stuff.
Yeah, other theories include the actual shopping experience has been ruined by everybody setting up drop shipping companies for the items. You say you want to go and find a particular item, there'll be 400 Chinese-made clones that you have to get through before you get to the original.
So they just get bored and give up.
Yeah, there's an element of that. But the other thing is they've lost a lot of money buying into a battery-operated lorry company, and it's lost $7.5 billion in a quarter. Now, it might come right for them, but it now leaves that company looking, Amazon looking vulnerable.
Yes.
And that's not a good look. So we still remain Amazon exclusive for our ebooks, and I don't think necessarily this is going to change the dynamics around sales or anything like that initially.
No.
But they have been making big changes behind the scenes on Amazon advertising. And you just wonder what is going on there. But there are lots more sort of whistles and bells added to it than there were even 6 months ago. So there's a lot more stuff to have to sort of get your head across when you're doing it. But that's an interesting thing. So Amazon, the sort of golden glow is slightly diminished, more tarnished now than it was. So that's a big one. You have another big industry shakeup.
Well, it's not really big, is it? It's an ongoing thing. We talk about it almost every week about the rise in the cost of raw materials for paperbacks. One of the main Swedish paper mills has divested. Divested four of its mills. So although, as far as we're aware, our main printer, Clays, don't use that company.
No, they don't.
But, of course, it'll have a macro effect on the rest of the...
There's a huge supply crisis worldwide on paperback print paper.
Mm.
It's just, there is a shortage. It's as simple as that. Some of that's down to environmental factors. A lot of it's due to the time it's now taking to ship stuff around the world. It takes, you know, it's taking three times as long. Ukraine crisis, war, is making things even worse.
It's interesting, isn't it? How, because this is the one thing I loved about studying economics at university and A-level, and even though you didn't do as well as I did in economics, you know a lot. It's how so many things have an effect, and there are so many ripples of effect as well. So,
well, I suppose when you've got an economy built on market sentiment, a lot of it's built on, you know, the trading side of things in terms of commodities and in the markets. It's about sentiment. It's about how people believe things are going to turn out. And so, you know, a small change of something can have a massively amplified effect in the minds of people. They're looking for problems.
Yeah.
And, well, there are plenty coming along. So, but I think that the paper situation is really acute. And I'd be very surprised if, we've talked about this before, that paperback costs for trade paperbacks with the big publishers are bound to go up.
Yeah.
No matter how hard Tesco or WH Smith demand that their books stay around the £5 mark, it just won't be possible.
No, because you can't operate at a loss, and they're so close to not making much of a margin on the books as it is. So it's just, it wouldn't work. It'll just collapse.
You know, and we have to keep our prices under review, but I don't think we'll be the first to change them.
No.
But, you know, it may have to happen. So bear all that in mind. But it is, it's an uncertain time. It really is.
We live in uncertain times.
We really do. Anyway, in amongst the uncertain times, and we've lived through a lot of them, let's think about Robert Dawes, who was a constant on British television. One of those actors. Oh, him. I almost like to call
him.
Yeah,
I always say that. If someone says, oh, who's Robert Dawes? I say, I'll show you a photo. And they always go, oh, yeah, I know him. He was in, and they name two or three of the things that he's been in. So one of the things that struck me watching his one-man show in Tunbridge Wells was There was more things he'd been in than even I thought I knew, even though we wrote the biography page on his
unbelievable
book.
Unbelievable, the people he worked with. And the nature of the show was that he was teasing out advice that he got from all the great writers that,
he'd been wonderful. In
show. Yeah, which was fantastic. Really good. But we've decided to bring you the question and answer section of that show. And this is going to be, it's not the longest section because Bob didn't quite know how long it was going to run for. He had an hour and a half slot, and I think it went for
overrun a little bit,
An hour and 5 minutes, I think, probably on his one-man element.
Maybe a bit more than that,
yeah,
I think.
I think I had about 20 minutes in which to get the audience warmed up for some questions. So we will bring you that Q&A from the Trinity Theatre in Royal Tunbridge Wells.
I want to ask you one question before we start. So before, I'm sure you've all got lots of things you'd like to ask. When are we going to get the album? Because we love the singing.
No, I wouldn't wish that on anyone. There may be a collection of the songs of PG Woodhouse,
which we'll
get together, because they really are very good. Lots of people don't know that he wrote the lyrics for things like "You're the Tops," "You're the Dum 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 Dum," and in olden days, "A Glimpse of Stocking Was." They're all his lyrics, and many people don't know that. But he wrote an awful lot of wonderful songs, and his speciality was writing romantic songs for the young lovers, which he would always add his own comic twist to. And he became particularly well known for that. So, yeah, there may be a sort of a compilation download or whatever they call it, with me attempting to warble away. Yeah. So, yeah, be careful what you wish for.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Do we have any questions? Yes, jump ahead.
How long did the writing process take you
for
your first book?
What's your name?
Ben.
Hello, Ben. One of my favourite names. My son's Ben.
Mine too.
And my publishers, it's a thing. Ben, how long did it take? Well, the honest answer to that is how long's a piece of string? Because it can vary. Some books can take a long time to write, just logistically, because an awful lot of writers, the vast majority of writers, aren't people like Peter James and Lee Child and Val McDermott, that's what they do. They write books, they promote them, and they go back and write books. Most people are writing books while having another job. You know, be it, you know, stacking shelves or selling insurance or a long day at the school, long day at the hospital, and then they try to find as many moments as they can to write. It does take a lot of discipline to do it when there's so many different things in your life, and that feeling of spinning plates is one that I think an awful lot of writers would acknowledge is the truth of their lives. So I can only say personally, the novella was quite easy to write because I'd been commissioned to write a television script for Yorkshire Television. And I set it in York, and they got the episode, they liked it, they kept it for 2 years, and then they didn't make it. And that's television for you. So it was in a bottom drawer, and a friend of mine said, "Have you ever thought of writing a crime thing, because you've done the radio thing, you've done this." And I suddenly remembered this script. So I looked at it, I'd been paid for it, it was now mine, and I thought, right, well, I'll try and adapt that story, that plot, into a book. And then I decided, well, I don't want to do it in Yorkshire. No reason, because I wanted something completely different. And I realised, I knew Gibraltar very well, I mean, sort of, to and from Gibraltar. My sister Katie, who's in this afternoon, lived in that neck of the woods for many years, and we would always visit. I always found it fascinating how different a place it is. It's a little bit of Britain with telephone box and the Marks and Spencers, in the Mediterranean, and quite extraordinary. And most importantly, they had the same system of law. The police force was the same, followed the same procedures as they do in Britain. In fact, the Royal Gibraltar Police Force, second oldest in the world after the London Met. I think it was created in about 1839 or something. So that's me being lazy. I didn't have to learn about French or Italian police procedures, which I knew nothing about. I could just use the knowledge and research that I already had. And that took me about 4 months, I guess. But the other novels have taken, from beginning to end, about a year. The writing, strangely enough, is the shortest part of it, the actual physical writing, what I call hitting the QWERTY. and getting it down with steam coming out of your ears. And that's when people open the door and they go, oh, he's writing. What they don't seem to realise is the vast majority of writer's time is spent thinking, and thinking very hard. Unfortunately, that thinking looks as if you're just having a doze on a sofa, and no one thinks anything's going on until you're producing it, quite literally. And then, of course, it goes to publisher, then it goes to editor, and then it goes through lots of different changes. So the whole thing can take up to a year. You can speed it up, but you work at the rate that's comfortable for you and allows you to tell your story in the best possible way. Are you a writer? Are you thinking of writing? Or
I've written scripts once or twice.
Yeah. Well, good. Well, I'd just encourage you to carry on. If you've got the interest and you've got the stories in your head, just go, well, don't worry about time. These things take the time and everything changes. You know, even when you've finished it, you've got a book sort of ready to go. It's sort of a first draft, a second draft, third draft. You know, it takes as long as it takes. But if you've got an urge to do it, and anyone here who's got a story and they've always had a sort of, you know, a yearning to actually write something, don't think about having to have it published necessarily. You can get it published. You may have a masterpiece, a classic on your hands, but just write as a form of self-expression and as a creative pastime. That alone is a great thing. So, you know, keep writing. I'll hopefully be doing one of your screenplays soon. What's your surname, Ben, so I remember?
Eisted,
that's it. Right, I look forward to your screenplay. Take care.
Fantastic. Yes, lady, you. Who's the back there?
Well, I had the initial idea for a murder mystery with a TV script. So I got the plot, and in my head, I got the characters. The fact that for The Rock, I moved them 1,000 miles south and put them in the sun was actually partly to do with the simple fact. I said, if I'm going to be writing these things, I'm going to be sitting in my study on a cold, wet November evening trying to get it done. In my head, I'd love to be in the Mediterranean sunshine. I'd love to be entering this fantasy world and going there and describing the sun, the beach, the mountains, the views of Africa, the views of the Costa del Sol coast and things like that. And again, the most important thing was location. It really does help if you know a place pretty well. Of course, over the years, I've got to know it a lot better than I did when I first started out, but it really is helpful to be authentic and do your research as well. But so the characters already existed. I'd sort of seen them, heard them, when I first had them in the television script. So I just took them out and dusted them down and tried to fit them in as best I could in Gibraltar. And after that, it was the plot. The plot was fairly similar. For the book, I had to expand it more. I had to have some more subplots. I had to have various other things. But the plot is always the main thing, certainly in murder mysteries and crime novels and thrillers. You've got to have a plot. And of course, good characters who speak and think that appear authentic, appear genuine, because there's nothing worse than you throw away a book if you don't believe in the situation and you don't believe in the characters. But the plot's the thing. P.G. Woodhouse used to say the plot is the most important. He used to say, I'm obsessed with plots, absolutely obsessed. Agatha Christie, Edgar Wallace, Dorothy L. Sayers, I love good plots. Nothing pleases me more, he said, than finding a good plot, wrestling it to the ground, pinning its arms behind its back, and then I sit down at my typewriter and I write it. Bliss. And I think that's true of all writing. If you've got a good plot, if you know where you're going, even if it changes along the way, even if the end can change, it is basically your structure. And you can alter it and change things as you go. You can learn from it. You can add and subtract. But you've got to have some sort of journey. to follow. And therefore, that's why I always do a précis, and I always do a more detailed treatment of the whole thing, so I've got something I can always come back to. And so I think that's very important. Does that answer your question?
It does.
Oh, good. Thank you. Well, sorry, what's your name?
Jenny.
Hello, Jenny.
Gentlemen, here.
Apart from the Royal, what is your favourite film, programme or play that you've worked on and why?
Oh, you know, I'm going to be absolutely honest about this. I've been incredibly fortunate that I've enjoyed pretty much everything I've done. And I've also liked the fact that I haven't been necessarily typecast. So I've done lots of different things. I've done comedy, I've done straight dramas, I've played lots of different characters from lots of different backgrounds, which I look back on now and I go, that is very fortunate. I mean, it wasn't my plan. The basic plan for most actors is just to do the next job and not be resting. Do I have a favourite? No, I loved Outside Edge. I've touched on Outside Edge, I've touched on The Royal, I've touched on Roger, which was a pleasure to do. Something that you haven't seen play-wise, I loved doing The Cherry Orchard last year. The chance to do Chekhov was fantastic, especially with such a great company. That was a wonderful play to do. The first time I'd really done Chekhov professionally, I always loved it and had seen so many productions, so it was lovely to be right in the thick of one and with a marvellous ensemble company. So that would be theatre, and as regards television, the ones you've seen already and so many more. The Mystery of Men was a great project to work on, about four guys who commit insurance fraud. That was good fun. Various situation comedies I've done, films I've done, which was Arthur's Dyke was one that I particularly enjoyed with Pauline Quirk, about four chaps and one of their wives, played by Pauline, who meet in their 40s and decide to actually recreate a journey that they made as younger student men and walk Offa's Dyke, and I play the character Arthur, and that was a joy to do. So I've been very fortunate. I've virtually every job. I can't think of a job which I've not been happy to be doing, I have to say. It sounds like a bland answer, but it happens to be the truth.
Any more questions? No more badges. Oh, yes. Anyway.
Hello.
Is there a preference for you between theatre and television?
That's an interesting question, Joe.
home crowd.
That's home crowd. That wasn't the one I asked you to say. that's a fiver misspent. They both have very different techniques. I think being an actor is always an interesting journey because you work in so many different mediums. They all end up pretty much, hopefully, doing the same thing, which is affecting an audience and telling a story and engaging people in that. And so you have to adapt all the time. I mean, doing a film is a completely different technique to doing television on the whole. You think it's cameras are cameras, but they're very different ways of having to work and prepare and be your character. Stage, of course, demands all sorts of other muscles. And you have to remember huge chunks of text. I mean, doing the Woodhouse show, I've got about 43 pages of solid text and lyrics to actually learn. And don't only learn it, you actually have to keep it up there, using up valuable memory in your noggin for months, sometimes years. You always have to have ready access to it. In television and film, you learn the script, you study it, you do the scene. You may spend an hour, you may spend 2 hours doing the scene. But at the end of it, it's gone. It's gone off to the director, the editor, the producers. You never see it again until you actually see it on the screen. And what you tend to do is you can wipe, and the next scene comes in. So that's a very different process. Radio, people say, oh, radio's nice, isn't it? I mean, you just have to read it, don't you? And I go, yeah, but I find radio, and I've done a lot of it, and I absolutely love it, is one of the toughest, because all you've got is the microphone. You've got your script, you've got your character, you've got your fellow actors, if it's a play or not a solo piece, but you have to communicate everything through the voice. And the knots you get yourself into with your script there, and if you're doing a big dramatic scene, you can find yourself at it like this, and at the end of the day, you walk out of a radio, walked out of the main radio, BBC drama, radio studios at Broadcasting House or Maida Vale or whatever, absolutely limp with exhaustion. But it's great fun. I was once doing a monologue, and it was written by Galton Simpson. And they'd asked me to do it. It had originally been recorded in 1964 by Ronnie Corbett, but they'd lost the tape. And the BBC was trying to find, you know, things and redo them. And Galton Simpson were there. I'd known them before that. And, you know, I was, oh, I've got to get this right. It's a 25-minute monologue, and it's just me. And we started. And after about 5 minutes, the producer... So in the box said, Bob, can I come out? I came out and said, yeah, great, love it, great. He said, can I just say something? You're sounding a bit like Hancock. Rhythms, you know, an arm, that's very nearly a foot, you know, all that sort of thing. So I said, I'm terribly sorry, that's not what I was thinking. So I went away. After another 5 minutes, he said, Bob, just going to come out. He said, oh, sorry, it's going to drive you up the wall, but you sound something like Hancock, we really don't want that. We want, you know, it's Galton Simpson, we don't want that. So I said, and it happened a third time. And after the third time, the guys were in the box and they came and they said, excuse me, Trevor, Bob, can we come in and just say something? And he said, yes. So they came up and they said, look, there's a reason for this. It's not Hancock, it's our rhythms, it's the way we write. And Hancock was doing our material. He brought his own genius to it. But the basis is our rhythms. It's the way we write some of our characters. So it's not Bob's fault. He's only, you know, working on the text. And I think it's an interesting thing for writers. Different characters, different rhythms, different things, you know. And each one is separate. And as a writer, you have to differentiate between each character, the way they talk and everything. So, yes, sorry.
Have we got time for one more?
One more quick one.
Yeah, quick one. I was going to ask, is there a part you haven't played yet that you would like to play?
Oh, yes. I mean, there are lots of parts that, sadly, I'm too old for many of them. But I'd like to do more Chekhov. I really would. And I'd like to do productions which cast elderly people. I mean, elder artists. I mean, we had Martin Shaw and Francesca Annis in that playing parts, which are traditionally cast as 40-year-olds, and they're both 76, and it's like colourblindness in casting, which is an essential part of diversity these days. The rules are breaking. You had Ian McKellen playing Hamlet at the age of 83, and he felt great. The moment he started playing Fierce in the Cherry Orchard, who's an 84-year-old, he felt like crap. he said, so I'd love to do that, and I'd like to think I've got another nice television, film, comedy in me somewhere, I guess. I mean, no particular part, but lots of possibilities. Yeah.
Thank you for the question, and thank you for all your questions, and thank you to Bob.
Thank you
for your time, and I mean, brilliant. Absolutely.
Well, I was worried that you were going to come up. Your first question was going to be, "Who are you?" But thanks very much, and thanks, Carol, for inviting us here. We've had a lovely time. Thanks for coming. Come next year. The festival will be here.
And one more thing to mention. Oh, and we have some books at the back in the cafe. So please,
if you haven't had a book signed of
the three that we publish at Hobo Books, then please do.
See you in the foyer. If not, see you around.
Uh, a small but perfectly formed audience at the Trinity Theatre.
They were, right. They were lovely. It was a very intimate atmosphere, wasn't it? And after the show, we all mingled and for drinks in the bar.
Yeah, it was lovely.
In the,
it was lovely.
Theatre bar, it was lovely.
Yeah, and, you know, it's always gratifying when people are very interested in how we got things going with Hoback and, you know, how we do it and all that stuff. So, you know, we had a, you know, good evening of chat before an absolutely epic journey back, which was, I think towards the end, got rather stressful because, you know, I can't drive past midnight anymore. I'm an old man.
Not only that, he was desperate for a wee-wee and all the garages were shut.
Non-stop from Tunbridge Wells to where we live is 200 miles and they closed the M6 without any warning. Even though it was, it wasn't for an accident or anything. They actually just, they knew they were doing the roadworks, but they didn't actually tell anybody they were going to shut it, which is ridiculous. And so the section around the Spaghetti Junction became, it was almost dodgems, wasn't it? People trying to flash people out of the way. I had one person up the back of my car flashing us to get out of the way in a 50 mile an hour zone when we're all bumper to bumper anyway. Where was I supposed to go? Very aggressive, an idiot. You know, part of me wants to be wrapped around a lamppost in Wensbury somewhere. But yeah, it was one of those things where, you know, a journey to forget. And the journey there wasn't easy either. And then, of course, stupidly forgot to pay the Dart toll. So I'm waiting for the penalty notice to arrive and another extra expense. But
no, I know.
But it was a good weekend overall. And we ought to mention that we made a little detour on the Saturday to go and visit the historic dockyard at Chatham.
We did. Yes, I've been in a submarine.
You've been in a submarine. Many of you will know it because, well, recognise the buildings and the brickwork because it's in Call the Midwife. They do a lot of filming there.
Yeah, it was quite funny because when I posted on Facebook where we were, and a friend of mine who lives about, I don't know, 4,000 miles away, said, oh, I'm so jealous. So Call the Midwife is popular in Nebraska.
No, it's popular everywhere. What a wonderful... I've been before, but this time I had a bit more time to sort of dwell on things, and I can't recommend it highly enough. It is just such a brilliant museum and complex with the ships there, HMS Gannet, HMS Ocelot, and HMS Cavalier. The ropery is unbelievable. Quarter of a mile long building. I think it's with three levels of rope making going on. And they demonstrate how it's done and the physical process and the technology that was used and is still used to make rope in this ropery. And the reason it was a quarter of a mile long is because they needed that length. It was the regulation of the Royal Navy for their anchor chains or for their anchor ropes.
We walked the length of the ropery.
It took forever. It was wonderful.
I don't think I've ever been in a building of that length.
No. Well, it is the longest brick-built building in Europe, so...
It is worth visiting just for that.
It's just stunning. It's stunning. But everything about that museum, the staff, the way it's all laid out, the interactivity elements, they couldn't have done it. You could not do it better. And
I bought a skipping rope.
You bought a skipping rope made from
rope.
You know, obviously rope at the ropery. So that was a great day. It was a beautiful day too. And we met up with friends. So we've had a good weekend. But we're back to... things Hoback this week.
Yes, I've already... I mean, what time is it? 4 o'clock in the afternoon? I've probably done about 10 hours work already.
It does feel that way, yeah. Yeah, I've not been quite... it is Easter. Sorry, it's not Easter Monday.
It's bank holiday.
Holiday Monday. I've been a bit slow. I mean, honestly, the drive took it out of me, so I'm finally feeling human again. But here we are with the Hopcast Book Show. Now, do you remember who our guest is next week?
Her name is Nicola.
Yeah.
So, well, Nicola, we don't really know Nicola very well, but we're going to find out about her. She approached us at the London Book Fair. We were interviewing Robert for the Hobcast.
Yeah.
And so we were sat in a cafe having lunch and we did the podcast. And then this lady came up to us and she said, I see you're doing a podcast. I would like to be a guest on your podcast.
Yeah. And why not? And very soon we'll be at Crime Fest in Bristol. Very, very soon. And so we're really looking forward to that. And you'll be hearing from Hoback authors. You'll be also hearing from some legends of the game. We also talk about Harrogate. I mean, Harrogate announced their full lineup this week.
Oh, yes, they have, haven't they?
So they've got Michael Connolly coming over and Kathy Reichs. And so the Americans are back.
Oh.
But, you know, there's been some chatter on Facebook. And I support this view of things. It's the same names. a lot of it every year. And I think that they're all traditionally published, pretty much.
I mean, I support that as well. It should be a mix. It should be much more democratic.
I think that's where Crimefest is scoring. If I'm honest, they are, you know, they're giving a platform to new authors, to people who haven't had an opportunity before. But
Harrogate, two of ours are going to be up there.
Exactly. And you know, with all due respect to Harrogate, it's a great festival, but it's kind of the same figures.
Yeah, and I keep seeing people saying, you know, I normally go, I've been going for years, but I'm going to give it a miss this year because it's so expensive and it's the same people and I can't afford to do it again.
It is extremely expensive. If you want to do the whole weekend and you want to stay in one of the hotels, it's £700.
What we did last year, we spent an awful lot of money going to Harrogate last year.
Yeah, and the hotel was rubbish. We're doing something slightly different this year. We're going to do, I mean, they are charging yet again for the second year site passes, I think they're called.
Yeah.
Which allows you into the sort of social elements of the festival, which is, let's be honest, when the real action happens. So we're paying for that and we're going to stay somewhere off-site.
We've got somewhere else to stay. It'll probably be nicer. Well, we'll be nicer.
It'll be a lot cheaper than the previous visit, but I still think that, you know, there really needs to be a thought about having a fringe or something like that, because there's a whole world, as we've now proven by getting into the CWA Daggers with our authors, there's a whole world of people making ripples from the independent scene who don't get a look in at Harrogate whatsoever.
No, there's some fantastic writers.
Yeah, there are. And they'll be there. They'll be there in the hospitality tent. There'll be the traditional authors with the stage who hang together and get very drunk, and then there'll be the rest of us. And that's kind of how it works. You know, who timidly go up and ask, can we have an autograph? But that's Harrogate, so they've announced all that. But they've gone through some tough times, had to cancel a year, and they're trying to recover financially. It is a charity, and they've got a formula that works for them, and it is regarded as the best crime festival, arguably in the world. Certainly in the UK, but just a thought that there is something else they could go out to, you know, innovate
exactly, that's the word that comes to mind, isn't it?
Innovate and broaden the appeal. All we need is a marquee in the grounds. That's all it needs.
I think we should just take our own two-man tent and invite people in one at a time.
And we might do that. That's tempting. Anyway, so we're back to normal things on Hoback. Lots of things to be, you know, driven at, and you know, it's all plate juggling all the time.
Plate juggling is what I do best.
Plate spinning, rather.
Oh, yeah. Plate juggling.
We'll be playing tennis as well this week, even though it's going to be a bit wetter than it was. Nice at the end of the week, I'm told. But we'll join you again next week with Nicola, second name to be revealed. Here on the Hobcast Book Show, which will be show number 70. But from myself, Adrian Hobart.
And myself, Rebecca Collins. And Aki the cat, who's in a chair staring at us.
Well, yes, she is. In her usual chair. My chair, actually. We'd like to thank you for joining us. Don't forget, of course, to check out our website, www.hobeck.net. excuse me. And also to subscribe to the podcast. The Hobcast Book Show is out weekly. We took a day extra this week, but next week it'll be back its regular time, so look out for it, and please subscribe if you wish. Thank you very much, and have a great, and as ever, a creative week. Bye bye.
You've been listening to the Hobcast from Hoback Books with Adrian Hobart and Rebecca Collins. You can find the show notes at our website, www.hobeck.net. You can also use the exclusive Hobcast discount code for any of the products at our Hoback online store. Just enter the code HOBCAST20 for a 20% discount. Don't forget to subscribe to the Hobcast and feel free to contact us with any feedback. Until next time, remember our motto, Trad Values, Indie Spirit. We'll be right back.